Hello, everybody. Good morning, and welcome to Meditation for Evolutionaries. So delighted to be with you. For any of you joining us for the first time, a special welcome. The way this event works is that I speak a bit about meditation here at the beginning, and then I lead us in meditation until the top of the hour, and then I take your questions for half an hour after that about what we've been doing today. And today I'm going to do a little bit of a different kind of meditation experiment than we've done here before, which I'll explain in a moment. But essentially, I really want to share. One of my goals with offering these monthly gatherings is to share insights that are emerging in my own work as a meditation teacher, as a spiritual teacher, new things I'm discovering that I want to share with the world. So that's partly what this is about. And I have some new elements that I'm going to be integrating into my teaching work of meditation over the coming year. And I wanted to just give you a little taste of that and invite you to explore it with me and let me know how it works for you. So that's part of what will be happening. So I guess just to dive really right into creating the context for that. So you've probably heard that Jeff Carrera and I are going to be starting a year-long meditation program in about a month from now, 4 weeks from yesterday, actually on April 22nd. It's called Opening to the Infinite, and it's the second year that we've offered this program, and we're both tremendously inspired to be doing it together again. And I guess just briefly, for those of you who don't know about this program, it's essentially a series of monthly virtual meditation retreats. So every month we get together virtually like this for either a full day or a half day and do practice together, discuss our practice, explore our practice, and really go into deep meditation. And then we have weekly materials that string those together. And I'm not bringing it up to talk about it now, but just by way of explanation for the practice we're going to be doing here, because in addition to that being obviously a very profound opportunity to do deep meditation with a large group of people on an ongoing basis, for Jeff and me, it's also an evolutionary laboratory. Some of you probably heard me use that term before, about the series of evolutionary laboratories that I've participated in over the last several decades that have really been the incubators for all the different teachings that I teach in my courses. And in particular, this really represents a laboratory for deepening our understanding of meditation and refining the practices so that they're more effective for us contemporary, you know, us moderns, as opposed to the ancients who invented a lot, who invented meditation. So in this program, we really are focusing on refining the whole process of awakening. And it was really in our program last year that we sort of refined what we've both come to call the practice of direct awakening. And I know many of you probably heard about my course by that title that I taught last fall for the first time, and many of you probably participated in that and are here today joining in. So in many ways, it was through this kind of having a focused, because to really, you know, learn more and deepen, you need to spend some time together over a period of time and doing focused work. And so that was really the focus last year. And of course, in between, and I'll speak about the practice of direct awakening in just a moment for those of you who aren't so familiar with it. But the context I'm creating here is that we have spent a lot of time examining the results from our laboratory, from what we learned in last year's experiment. And as we're heading into doing this for another year with a new group of people, and you're invited, of course, we've been thinking about what other elements might enhance and deepen the program, and do we want to experiment with this year? And that's really the context for what we're going to be doing today. I'm going to share a couple elements that are really new to how I've taught meditation, and we think are going to enhance and help people not just have experiences of awakening, but ultimately sustain them, which is really the goal, isn't it? I mean, many of us may have started on the spiritual path looking for spiritual highs, for special experiences that would blow our minds. But I know eventually all of us come to the point where what we really are interested in is an awakening that doesn't come and go. The ability to sustain awakened consciousness throughout life, throughout the ups and downs of life and everything it throws our way. And that's our goal too. And so that's where we're going to be pushing deeper in this coming year. So maybe just to give you the brief context for that, and then we'll be getting into practice shortly, because I'm going to do a couple of different practice experiments with all of us here today. So the practice of direct awakening, which has really become the entire focus of how I teach meditation now. Essentially what it's about is, instead of practicing a technique now that will hopefully lead to an awakening sometime in the future, we are directly practicing what we call the natural inner postures of awakened consciousness. So, in other words, a lot of us have learned meditation techniques that are designed to sort of cultivate inner capacities or sort of clear the way for some lightning bolt of awakening to happen sometime in the future. And those help us in all kinds of ways, but often we practice those for decades and decades and we don't, you know, ever experience this radical shift into an awakened consciousness that we maybe have glimpsed and tasted. And so what we've really created with the practice of direct awakening, we actually derived it from awakened consciousness itself, meaning we said, look, what are the natural ways that a person who is awake, who is in liberated awareness, who has liberated awakened enlightened consciousness, how does their consciousness show up? How do they relate to life? How do they relate to the human experience? And can we essentially create a set of practices that are directly practicing being awake, directly practicing being free during the meditation, with no thought of getting somewhere else in the future, only being awake now, only stepping into awakened consciousness right now? Because what have we all heard about the nature of awakening? It's awakening to our true nature. It's awakening to who and what we already are. It's awakening to a sacred, vast, incomprehensible dimension of our own being that is not something that we create. It's something that has always been here, but we didn't see it because we were distracted by something else. So if awakening is awakening to who and what we already are, if it's the discovery of the profound, unimaginable glory of our own divine nature right now, then how could a practice that's aiming for a result in the future, how could it really awaken us? But what if we could practice simply opening to that true nature right now? What if we could practice simply allowing this natural, what's been called the natural state, allowing it to manifest, to just be, because we stop getting in its way? That's really the essential insight and essential focus behind the practice of direct awakening. So to give you an example, so what's one thing that we discover when we have an experience of awakened consciousness? And if you haven't had one, what is one of the things we read about it and have heard about it. Awakened consciousness does not grasp on, and it doesn't resist. When we are having an experience of being awake, of being free, one of the things we notice is that we're no longer grasping onto or identifying with thought, with the mind. It's what it means to be beyond the mind or free of the mind. It doesn't mean there is no thought, it doesn't mean there is no mind, but we're not clinging to it, grasping onto it for answers and for a sense of identity. Similarly, we're not grasping onto feelings, we're not grasping after experiences, and we're not resisting or pushing away thoughts, feelings, and experiences. We're just letting the whole play of experience and phenomena arise, change, move away as it does, without trying to change it, without, as the Buddha said, without aversion and craving. We've transcended aversion and craving. We're free. Everything can happen. None of it knocks me off my center. I'm no longer in reaction to what arises. So could we practice that directly as a meditation practice? That natural inner posture of awakened consciousness, is that something that you and I could sit down for a period of time every day and put into practice in meditation? Absolutely, it is. And when you start practicing meditation like that, suddenly you find you're practicing liberation. You're practicing awakening, and your own awakened consciousness, which has always been here, will show right up. I mean, I don't mean it's necessarily going to always have an instantaneous result. Obviously, we've got a lot of momentum in other directions in our psyches. So I'm not saying this is an instantaneous fix and you just do it for 1 second and your life's changed forever. I don't mean that. So I want to be careful, because even though I'm talking about a practice that you can do right now and that can have instantaneous results or reveal immediate access to awakened consciousness and really be practicing awake, being awake, you know, it's still a practice, and it's still, obviously, there's a reason we're practicing it, because it's not our habit. Our habit is going in another direction, which I'm not going to talk about all the ego structures and habits that we're working against today. That would be too ambitious for this brief talk, but I think we all are aware that we have a lot of habits that are not awake, that are not what I just described. And yet, because the practice is now aligned with awakening, it's aligned with the nature of awakened consciousness, we're now no longer postponing our freedom. We're no longer throwing up barriers between who we are right now and our own deepest awakened true nature. So that's the nature of the direct awakening practice that I teach, that we'll be doing here, that Jeff and I teach in our year-long program. We teach 8 inner postures of awakened awareness. I just mentioned one of them, or gave you an example of one of them. But it's in that context it's on top of that now that we're innovating further, and we're looking at other things that will support us in that practice. So, because for instance, even if all of us are doing this practice that I just described, one of these 8 inner postures, and even if we're all doing it together, invariably some of us are going to have a much deeper practice than others. Some of us are going to be able to let go of grasping and resisting. Others are going to have a much harder time letting go, just being. So why is that? Why is there a difference? Well, certainly we could say, well, we all have different backgrounds. Some of us have more experience with this, and that's part of it. But generally speaking, we could just say there's different degrees of readiness for awakening, different degrees of willingness to leave behind the habits of the past and step into the sort of radical immediacy, the radical insecurity of awakening, of letting go of reference points, letting go of identity, allowing ourselves to enter into a life that's more like a free fall than any kind of holding on or standing still or knowing where we are or being in one place. You know, freedom means freedom. It means freedom from yourself. It means freedom from the known. It means freedom from the habitual. It means freedom from reactivity. It's the most beautiful and wonderful life a human being can have, but it is, for a part of us, it's utterly terrifying and always will be. And so on this point of readiness and willingness and really ability to practice, one of the things that we're now exploring and that I want us to explore a little bit today is the possibility that there are capacities and attitudes and orientations, dispositions that we can bring to the practice that will enable us to be able to meet it, to be able to do it, to be able to really go where it's trying to take us right now. So, for example, what's an example of a quality that makes us more ready for awakening, or an attitude or orientation? How about intention? Having a strong, clear intention, meaning having a deep sense of where I want to go, of what awakening is, and having really reflected deeply upon everything that is in the way of that and everything that represents, and knowing that I want to go there. That's a very powerful foundation for practice. If we don't have that, but we sit down to do the practice, we might have momentary deep experiences, but they'll probably come and go. Another powerful foundation would be humility. Humility, which means I realize I don't know. I realize there's something so much bigger than me that I don't yet know, that there's so much further to go, that there's a different way of being that I have not yet mastered. So I'm now open to go somewhere because I realize I don't have it all sorted out. I don't have life all figured out, even though I kind of pretend I do to the world. And I'm stepping into that humility that makes me open to the unknown, open to the infinite. Or audacity. There's an audacity required to leave the mind of the world behind and go into a deeper and bigger consciousness. And many other sort of qualities that we can bring to our practice, and when we do, they really enable us to step deeper and further immediately right now. So in exploring this, Jeff and I have come up with, we call it, six pillars of profound spiritual practice that make up that I mentioned three of just now, and that are this sort of qualities, attitudes, orientations, capacities that we can cultivate, but outside of practice, but in this case, in the context of doing meditation practice. And so what I'm going to invite you to explore with me today in our experience as we now shift into doing some meditation is we're going to just notice what it's like to do the practice of direct awakening and then to add in the cultivation or the focus on one of these different qualities and notice if it shifts our ability to practice, if it takes us deeper, just what happens. So we're going to work with a couple of different of the inner postures of awakening and a couple of the different pillars of practice, and we're going to see what happens for us. So for this meditation experiment we'll be doing, I want to just invite you to be very open-minded, leave behind what you already know about practice and about awakening and about meditation, and just let yourself go somewhere new. And so with that, I just want to invite us all to just take a few deep breaths, just to allow ourselves to let go of everything that's on our mind, including the talk I just gave, and just allow ourselves to just relax into this moment. And whether you're listening live or listening to a recording later, just allow yourself to become aware of the large group of us gathered from around the world. Feel the collective presence, the collective intention and focus that's here between us. You can do this practice with your eyes open or closed, but it doesn't matter. If you have them open, just let your gaze stay in one place. Don't drift around looking at things. Other than that, anything goes. Also, I would encourage you to be still as you can physically. So the first inner posture of awakening that we're going to work with is what we call immediacy. Immediacy. So awakening is the discovery that there's nowhere else to go. That all of our seeking for some special experience, some lofty goal that we're going to get to in the future, has all been misdirected because who and what we really are is already awake. We're already aware. It's the discovery that this moment as it is right now is missing nothing. This moment of experience that you're having right now is already whole and complete. That who you are right now lacks nothing. So for this practice, I want to invite you to just be as you are. Embrace everything about this moment as it is, about yourself as you are in this moment. Letting go of any idea of the future, or of who you will be in the future. Letting this moment be as it is, letting yourself be as you are. spend so much of our lives imagining a future moment when everything will be just right. Everything in our outer life will line up, and everything within us will align. And then we'll be free. Then we'll be whole. Then we can let go. And finally fully live. I'm inviting you to make that moment right now. The moment you just stop trying. And realize this is it. Nothing to prepare for, nowhere to get to, no one to become, other than all of what you are right now. Whatever experience you're having right now, whatever thoughts are arising, whatever feelings are here, whatever sensations are present, just allow it. Just accept it. Just embrace it. Let go of the insistence that something is not right yet. Something is not happening yet. Now, I want to invite you to just pause the meditation for a moment. You don't need to actively come out of meditation, but just kind of, we're going to shift our attention somewhere else for a moment and just let the meditation continue in the background. That's probably the best way to put it. So we've been practicing this inner posture of immediacy. And what I now want to invite us to do is briefly step into one of the pillars I mentioned, one of these qualities or orientations or dispositions that we're going to then bring to the meditation we're already doing. And the pillar I want us to explore is humility. So I want to just invite you to just contemplate humility with me. Just let yourself begin to feel into and become present to really step into a place of humility. That's what we're doing. We're stepping into a very humble attitude in ourselves. So humility is a beautiful thing. One of the greatest spiritual teachers I know has said many times, humility is the key to the kingdom, metaphorically, meaning awakening. Humility means many things, but in this context, let's step into the recognition that I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to be awake. That's not something I can know with my mind. All the tools, and I could do all the reading, and I could, you know, think about this intently and come up with, you know, I could write books about it, but it's always going to be a mystery. Awakening is going beyond anything I can ever know with my mind, any strategy I can ever perfect. So I don't know how to do it. I don't know how to meditate. And I don't know. Humility also means, you know, I don't know. I don't really know that there's anything wrong. Because, of course, our judgmental, critical ego is always judging and discerning. Well, I should be doing it this way. It should feel like this. I should be having this experience. This is definitely not awakening because I don't feel very awake. I shouldn't have these thoughts. I shouldn't have these feelings. I'm too tense. I can't do this. Or, you know, oh, here it is. It should feel like this. Now I'm feeling very peaceful and blissful. So I guess I'm awakening. All that knowing. But you don't know. I don't know enough to really be able to control my experience. I don't really know that there's anything wrong right now. I don't know that I'm inadequate, that there's something that I need to change to be free. Maybe the moment as it's arising is actually perfect and whole and complete. Who am I to say it's not? Who am I to be the grand judge of reality as it's presenting itself? And humility means, I certainly don't know where all this is going. I may have had experiences of awakening, really profound ones. I may be the world's greatest enlightenment scholar, have PhDs in it. But, or I may have be very enlightened and have a very refined consciousness already, but maybe there's infinitely deeper dimensions than I have yet tasted and known. So I don't know. But I'm open and available and interested. I want to invite you to just step into this humility in yourself. Allow yourself to realize you don't know so many things. Just let yourself be humble. I don't have it all figured out. I'll never have it all figured out. The part of me that wants to have it all figured out is arrogant, frankly. It's a control freak. What if I just admit to myself, I don't know? And then I can just be open and find out and be in a place of constant discovery. Humility is a beautiful, soft, open, receptive place to be. Would that we could live there our whole life. So now, I want to invite you from this place of humility to bring your attention back to the meditation. Back to the immediacy. There's nothing missing. Nowhere to go. Embracing this moment as it is, with no insistence that this is an inadequate moment or that you are an inadequate being right now. So you can let the moment be, let yourself be. Just as you are, just as it is. I now invite you to just let go of this meditation we've been doing. And if now would be a good moment, just to shift positions if you need to. We're going to do another 10 or 15 minute meditation experiment here using a different inner posture and a different pillar. But just maybe take a moment to adjust and make sure your body feels good. Stretch for half a sec. Okay, so we're now going to explore the inner posture that we call presence. And presence really focuses on being, having the presence to be undistracted by whatever arises. But I'm realizing, so time-wise, so what I'm going to do is I'll set up the pillar first. We'll get ourselves in the orientation and attitude to practice, and then I'll take us into presence. I think that's going to be a better use of time right now. So the pillar, the attitude, the disposition, the orientation I want to bring us into for this next practice is what we call faith. And another word for this would be trust. It's really faith or trust. Now, of course, in faith has a lot of traditional connotations that many of us don't like. And so I want to invite you to let go of those and realize I'm not talking about having faith in some supreme being who's going to take care of everything. And if we just stop trying to control life, that somehow a magical super being is going to come in and make everything work for us. Nothing like that at all. And I don't think that's what the traditional mystics really meant either, but it's gotten quite confused over the centuries, and certainly recently. So faith and trust in this context is see, awakening requires us to let go of this, of our usual strategic way of being, where we try to understand things so we can implement strategies to achieve certain goals. And obviously this has worked for us in all kinds of ways in our lives. Many of us have been very effective at achieving success through that orientation. But awakening is ultimately about letting go of the mind, letting go of control, allowing a deeper capacity, a deeper wisdom capacity, a deeper care, a deeper creativity, a deeper strength, all to emerge within us from somewhere that the mind doesn't know. So in order to be able to let go of the old way of command and control, of figure it out, strategize, execute, in order to realize, let go of that, it takes faith, it takes trust. That when I stop trying to control everything, things will still work. Something else will come online. We're kind of letting go of an old operating system and allowing a new one to come online, but the new one can't emerge until we let go of the old. So there's an inner leap of faith and trust that's kind of constantly required to live an awakened life. And so I just want to invite you now to step into this orientation, this willingness. It's a sense that I can, another way to look at it would be, I can do this, but I don't know how yet. But it's the, I can do, you know, this is possible. I can go here. And in particular, in meditation, all of these inner postures, this practice of direct awakening, every single posture requires us to step to a place that to do something our ego can't do, to do something your mind can't figure out how to do. So if you're only trying to do it with your mind and your ego, you won't be able to do it at all, and it'll be only frustrating. So, but the invitation is, no, but there's another part of you that's already here, that's fully able to do this and is always already doing this meditation practice, because it's just the natural practice of being awakened. So have the faith in your own true nature that you can do this thing that sounds, or that seems on face value to be impossible. So we're just stepping into a faith and trust in the mystery. And in that, we're going to now do a brief practice of presence. And presence has many dimensions to it, but the particular dimension I want us to explore is what it is to be aware of awareness, to be present to our own presence, to be conscious of our own consciousness. Right now. So in any given moment, there are thoughts, feelings, sensations, emotion, everything that arises in our experience as we meditate. And we're not trying to make any of that go away. But being awake means we're not lost in the stream of thought. We're not in reaction to the feelings and sensations that arise. We're not embedded in that flow of experience. We're awake to the awareness in which that's all arising, which is your own consciousness, your own awareness, your own presence right now. So simply allow yourself to just be aware that you're aware, to be aware of this awareness that is always here. For some of us, this will take a lot of faith. At face value, it will seem impossible. All I can see are my thoughts and feelings and sensations. What do you mean be aware of awareness? Where is that? What is that? I don't know that. I can't do that. Take the leap of faith. Awareness is what you are. You're always aware. You're always conscious, except maybe when you're asleep. You're hearing these words. You're aware of the thoughts arising in response. You're aware of how you feel. I'm saying become aware of awareness, of what you are that is not merely a thought or a feeling or a sensation. That which is aware of those things but is not one of them. If all you seem to be aware of are the thoughts running through your mind, sensations and feelings you're experiencing, realize that those are not an obstacle to being present, to being awake. Nothing about your mind has to change. Nothing about your experience has to change. Being awake is a relationship to your mind, a different relationship to your experience. All the content of experience can be the same. So just allow yourself to be aware of the part of you that is aware of those thoughts. To notice the consciousness, the awakeness that's here right now, hearing these words. There's the words, the sound of my voice, and there's the one who is hearing the words, aware of the sound. Just notice that awareness. want to invite you to let go of the meditation now. And just allow yourself to take a minute or two to ease out of this whole meditation experiment we've been doing for the last about 40, 45 minutes. And just take a moment to reflect on what you noticed about these different practices. Some of you may have found one of them much more accessible or easy to do or understandable than the other one. That's normal. That's why we teach 8 different inner postures, because we know that each of us finds access in different ways. But notice, you know, what worked and how and why, to the degree that you can. And particularly in the first more in-depth exploration we did of immediacy, you know, what changed when we brought humility into the practice? Did that help open up the practice, or did it add one too many things? And, you know, it was really working before, but then we did that and it kind of got muddled up because you were trying to do too many things at once. And I'm very interested to know what your experience of this was. So I want to encourage you, if you're so willing, to post, if you're listening online, to post on the comment, the question thread. Just feel free to share observations. You don't have to only ask questions. Actually, since I'm asking for the feedback, let me ask you this, because I may not read all the feedback out, but it'll really help me in my just inquiry into this as a teacher. So if you have a question, can you write question before your question, like question colon? And that way it'll help me pull out the questions that are going to be helpful. And I'm taking questions specifically about what we did here just now, what I spoke about today, and the practices we did here today. So yeah, just write question and then I'll focus on those. And then later I'll read more of the feedback about how it all worked for you, which I'm gathering data. Now, while you're gathering your questions, so just a brief word about all this. So if you find this approach intriguing, I want to invite you to learn more about this year-long opportunity to go very deep into the practice of direct awakening with me and Jeff Carrera, who's an amazing teacher. He's one of the best meditation teachers out there, which is why I'm teaming up with him, so that we can really push the edges together and take people somewhere really profound together. OpeningToTheInfinite.com is the webpage where you can read about this program. It's quite a read, so I encourage you not to go read it now while we're continuing to talk, but just make a note. It's OpeningToTheInfinite.com, and it really presents in depth all the different modalities we're going to work with over the next year and how it's all going to play out. Again, it's the focus of this particular program is really around doing retreat, because Jeff and I realized that even though we were both teaching a lot of online courses and we had a lot of people doing daily meditation for, you know, half an hour a day or an hour a day as a practice, that really the missing piece for so many of us these days is intensive time on retreat, which has always been central to the path of awakening. If you go back historically, there were not awakening human beings, you know, sages and masters who didn't do intensive time on retreat. It serves a different function than just doing daily practice. Doing daily practice serves a very important function. It enables us to ground ourselves it enables us to repeatedly step into awakened consciousness and begin habituating ourselves to being awake on a daily basis. So it provides this foundation for each day. But something happens when you take a full day and step into awakened consciousness for the day and continue to practice these postures of awakening all day long with guidance and reflection and discussion and then deepening more. What happens is we step so far over to the other side that we start to get used to being there. And we start to get used to, it starts to seem, you know, if you spend a whole day there, you start to feel like, this is me now, this is home. and going back to the old habitual ego structure starts to seem more, ever more foreign. And how could I go back? You almost can't. Ideally, you go so deep in the retreats that you forget how to go back to your old habituated sense of limitation. And you start to experience what it is to be open to the infinite all the time, which is why we gave it that title. Opening to the infinite. Oh, and by the way, there is a link at the bottom of the webcast page to that web page as well, so you don't have to write it down if you're listening online to the event page. It's there. So we're very excited to be inviting a new group into this next year of exploration, and it all begins on April 22nd. I hope you'll go read about it and check it out and consider being part of the experiment for the next year. Super excited about it. All right, let me see what's being posted. Okay. So, that's an interesting question. Sylvia asks, does the practice of direct awakening still make sense for people who are not yet all that ready for awakening? So this is a good question, actually. It's going to illuminate something. So, you know, what I laid out today is that here is a very powerful way to do meditation that is, the essential insight here is that, just to maybe back up a little further than where I started today to create context. So, there is a long-standing debate in the traditions and in just in the whole conversation about enlightenment and awakening. And it's between the sort of practice schools and what are called the sudden schools of awakening. And, well, I'm probably oversimplifying, but maybe I won't use those labels because historically there are all kinds of different ways of looking at this. But essentially there's this recognition that happens. So we do spiritual practices to try to get ready for awakening, to make ourselves more ready for awakening, right? And then when we have an awakening experience, we realize, wait a minute, I'm realizing something that was always here. This is who I always was. This was always true. I didn't cultivate this. And there's often, when we have an awakening, we have this insight, we say, none of the practice I've done had anything to do with this. Following my breath, chanting the mantra, you know, trying to be a witness to all that arises, trying to be very mindful of all the thoughts and sensations that are occurring. None of that had anything to do with awakening. Awakening was just this radical discovery of the free, open nature of my own consciousness, the already liberated nature of awareness itself, of who that's always been there. I've always been this. I don't know how I didn't see it. It was right here. And so some who have had this recognition then say, well, practice is just getting in the way. Doing meditation practice is actually an obstacle to awakening because it's reinforcing the idea that it's not here right now and I'm doing these things to try to get somewhere else. And so you've had people historically who said, don't do practice. It's just part of the whole delusion. It's part of perpetuating your belief that you're not already enlightened, and you just need to let all that go. And then on the other, and so there's been that sort of orientation, and then there's been the, no, we need to do a lot of practice. So, and in a long, drawn out, over decades, maybe lifetimes kind of orientation. And the core insight that really emerged that changed the game for us and that gave birth to this whole direct awakening approach was the recognition that you could practice awakening. So you can practice without postponing awakening. You can practice these inner postures of awakening right now. So that's the sort of, what we feel is the sort of game changer about this way of practicing, because we no longer have any goal out there, but we can practice intently now, and we can, you know, can awaken right now through practice. So, because see, if the other approach, the no practice approach, doesn't tend to lead to very profound results. You know, people have experiences of awakening and then they fall completely out of it, and they have another experience, they fall out of it, and nothing ever really changes. Why? Because there's so much momentum that needs to get reversed, in a sense. So to come to Sylvia's question, I made the point that, okay, there's this powerful practice of direct awakening, and then there's still our readiness to receive awakening, our readiness to open to the infinite, our readiness to be transformed. And what are the qualities that make that up, that can be cultivated, that through intense intention and focus and contemplation, we can deepen in these qualities or orientations or attitudes. And that's what then has given birth to these six pillars that we're going to be integrating into our program this year. And so Sylvia is saying, okay, but if someone's not very ready, does the practice of direct awakening work? So the answer is, we still feel, and I feel very strongly, that this practice is something that anybody can step into who's got, you know, a reasonable amount of sort of cognitive, emotional, moral, psychological development, just like a good mature adult can do these practices and get benefit. And from the point of view of teaching, we separate these things out so we can work on them. Of course, doing the practice of direct awakening is going to start to cultivate the qualities also by itself, right? If you start discovering the inherent perfection of your own true nature, you're going to naturally start to trust more deeply in that. So that faith and trust will start to grow. If you start to realize that you're not your mind, and that you don't need to grasp on and cling on to knowledge and certainty in order to be free and be awake, you're going to have more humility. You're going to realize, oh, you know, there I am trying to know everything and control and strategize, but you know what? I'm discovering something beyond that. So it's not that the qualities don't get built through practice. They can get built in all kinds of ways. We, you know, we can develop humility in life in all kinds of ways. Often when we're wrong about something really important, we make a big judgment call, it leads to a catastrophic result. It often people become very humble afterwards. They realize, wow, I was arrogant. I thought I knew better, and look what happened. So many ways to cultivate these kinds of things that make us more ready for awakening. But the practice of direct awakening itself is indeed one of them too. But we're breaking it out into these six pillars this year so that we can focus on them, because we feel that it will help more people become more ready. So Shannon has a good question here in Penticton, I think it looks like, BC. She says, if I'm already whole and perfect in this moment, then isn't my work already done? Great question, Shannon. So here's the question back for all of us. Can you really accept and embrace the truth of that without reservation, even when you don't feel whole and perfect at all? Even when your mind is insisting that there's something wrong with you, that there's something that, you know, about your experience in meditation right now that shouldn't be happening, that this is not it. Even when reality doesn't feel very whole or enlightened or complete, can you remain rooted in the knowledge of your true nature? When that's the case, then your work is done. But it's not, but even then it's not done, because that is an ongoing, that's an ongoing stance that needs, you know, we never want to take for granted. So we could say, yes, your work's done when you really have become stabilized in that, in the acceptance of that truth. That's really the best way to put it. When you're stable in your ability to not deny your own true nature. When that has happened, you could say your work's done. But if that has happened, you won't say my work is done, because you won't have any need to feel, hey, my work is done. The whole part of us that wants to go, oh, whew, my work's done, is itself part of what we're letting go of. And part of, you know, that's not part of your true nature. Your liberated, whole, perfected nature is not interested in wiping its hands and saying, I'm done. Your true nature is interested, you know, what we find when we embrace the truth of freedom is that we become a passionate participant in ongoing evolution and growth and development. We become a participant in the emergent flow of life, no longer afraid of change, no longer resistant to growth. We become a fluid, dynamic system that's now in a dance with life, and so our work's never done. You know, you may not, the work of trying to fix myself so I can be, you know, okay, that work might be done, but your work just got much bigger, because now you're part of the consciousness team that's evolving the cosmos, and that's an infinite project, seemingly, and awakening consciousness itself. So, yeah. Anyway, I hope that helps clarify it. Okay, thank you. Let's see here. Just skimming through a lot of the comments here. Okay, Gina in Portland says, how do we silence the stream of thought that is present related? I'm not sure what the last part means, but let's just talk about thought. How do we silence the stream of thought? So here's one of the stunning things about awakening and about really meditation in the context of direct awakening practice. So many of us have gotten this idea that meditation is about silencing the mind, because we think, well, okay, meditation means I have inner peace, and inner peace would certainly have to mean that I didn't have a lot of crazy thoughts going on all the time. That doesn't seem like inner peace at all. So I need to get quiet and present, and that means I got to silence all this thought. And it seems that way at first. But you see, there's an interesting thought experiment for a second here. So if meditation is about spiritual awakening, and if spiritual awakening is about transforming our relationship to life such that we can be awakened all the time, meaning living an awakened human life, not just having a taste of it in a quiet moment of meditation. So if that's what awakening's about, then how could it mean that thought had to go away? So I don't know if that was clear for everybody, but if spiritual awakening is something that we want to be all day long, if being awake is something we want to be able to be, we want to be a liberated human being, an awakened one who lives and walks in the world as a transformed person who's really a sort of embodiment of our highest potential. If that's what awakening is, then how on earth could it include something like not having thoughts. In other words, what's our idea? Because often what's in the way of our awakening is our ideas about awakening. So what's your idea about awakening if it means not having an active mind? Do we imagine, for instance, and I'm asking this genuinely, do we imagine that when we're awakened, our mind will be quiet and we will just walk around as like a big blank, a blank space, and then like words will just come out of our mouth and actions will like come out of our body, wise, perfect, enlightened actions and words, but there will never be thoughts because thoughts aren't enlightened. Thoughts are whatever, the ego, the devil, I don't know. Okay. Do we think that? See, I think maybe some, like we haven't maybe thought about it. Like if you think about, of course that's not what it would mean, right? So let's say, what would it mean? It would mean that we had discovered a space in which we were able to discern amidst all the arising of thought that happens and all the arising of feeling and emotion and sensation. The whole world of human experience would be arising within us, but we now could discern more clearly which thoughts were wise and made sense and which thoughts were silly or reactive or conditioned and or old habit or limiting and didn't make sense. That's what wisdom means. I now can discern accurately. I can make accurate meaning out of what's happening. I can see into other people's motivations. I can see into whether other people are making sense or not. You know, I can see whether my mind's making sense or not. You know, it's radical, profound spiritual discernment that leads to the experience of spontaneously arising wisdom that then shows up as wise, enlightened action. And in along with that, a purification of our motivation, where we're now not trying to pursue, you know, small, unwholesome personal agendas, but we're essentially motivated for the good of the whole, for the greater good. So we only want what's best in each moment to the degree that we can see what it is. So then, and many other things, but let's just simplify and say, that's the goal. That's what awakened life means. So, and meditation as the practice of awakening. So then in meditation, what good would it be to just quiet our mind? I mean, how would that lead to the other? You know, somebody might have a theory, but I'm going to say it doesn't really make sense if what we're doing in meditation is practicing awakening. So if we're practicing awakening, what's our in meditation, what's our relationship to the mind? It's not a problem. Thought is not a problem. Thought can come and go in meditation, no problem. But are we distracted by thought? Are we taken away by thought? Are we interested? Are we falling into the stream of thought every time thought arises? That's a difference now. So in meditation, what we were looking at a little bit in that very brief practice we did at the end is, can I be aware and awake even with thoughts arising? Can I not just fall into the stream of thought? Is there something else to be aware of? Yes, the context in which thought arises, which is your own consciousness, your own awareness, is always here, and you can learn. Again, I know that one's very hard for a lot of people. Some people probably found it very easy. Most of us probably found it hard. So, and that's normal, because that takes a leap. It takes a shift in our awareness where we suddenly go, oh, yeah, there's thoughts, but there's also me. Not me as in the self-concept, not me as in who I know myself to be, but there's the one who's aware of the thoughts. There's the one who's aware of the feelings. There's the one who's having the experience. Oh, I can be self-aware. I can be aware of myself, with a capital S, of the experiencer, the subject, the one who's having the experience. When I discover that, I realize, oh, the thoughts are not an obstacle. They're not a problem. I was just always distracted by them. I thought they were the whole world. I thought thought and feeling and sensation was life, was me. I thought I was the mind. You know, this story I have, this inner monologue with my dialogue with myself and the thought stream and my certain feeling of being me. I thought that was me. Now I've realized I'm not that at all. I'm an infinite dimension. I am vast beyond measure. I can't find where I start and where I end, because I am consciousness. I am that one without a second. I am the infinite. And wow, I'm in a body. I'm the infinite that has a body and that has a mind and has thoughts and feelings and sensations. But I'm not that limited corporeal form any longer. I am vaster than the cosmos. I am timeless and changeless. I am awareness. I am that. And this is it. Now, in this freedom, nothing needs to change. Let me put it this way. Nothing needs to change for us to be free. Nothing needs to change for our true nature to be discovered, manifested. That doesn't mean there's not a lot in the world that needs to change. And in fact, probably the only way to really see what really needs to change in the world is to step out of the drama and cycle of reactivity and unconsciousness and into the discovery of who and what I am and who and what reality really is. We step into that. Now we start to see a whole lot of things that really should change to align with this higher knowing and this deeper truth. And that's why I said we then become what I call an evolutionary. You know, we become somebody who is now just part of the evolutionary process, an active, conscious agent in the evolutionary process, that who's no longer identified with the personal self and the personal story and all the limiting beliefs and all the reactivity and habits of the past. The traces of all that still come and go within us until maybe they don't eventually, but they're no longer running the show because we have become free. We have become awake. And that changes everything. So I realize we've come to the end of our hour and a half, so maybe that's a good place to leave it. So I think in closing, I just want to say thank you so much for coming. I look forward to reading through all the comments about the practices. Appreciate you being a part of the experiment with me here, and look forward to doing this with all of you again next month at the same time. And for those of you who decide to jump into the deep pool with me and Jeff for our Opening to the Infinite program, I can't wait to get to know you better and see what we can all discover about this mystery of awakening together. So thank you so much for coming, and see you next time. Bye-bye.